Chapter 6. Amanda. From the passenger seat of the car, Amanda looked up at the first floor windows of the red brick building on 43rd Street. The glass was blacked out with thick paper that had yellowed with time, as if it had been painted with grease. "You sure this is the place?" she asked. Farrow put the car into park, said,
"This is the place. Second floor. I know it's scary, but you just have to give it a chance."
"Give what a chance? I've spoken to counselors before. It doesn't help."
"Look, this is part of the court order. There's no getting out of this. You've got to go, so you may as well try to make the best of it."
Amanda looked back at the building. There was a street-level shop. They sold used musical instruments, and a sign said they also did repairs. The store was closed. She couldn't tell if there was light on the floor above because of the paper on the windows. The door beside the entrance to the music shop had a red buzzer.
"I don't feel well enough. Can't I skip just this one last time?"
"You've put it off for long enough. You were supposed to start counseling before the end of September. It's now November. Your PO should have breached you a month ago. She only relented because I called her and told her I'd be bringing your ass to this place myself," he said.
"I'm sorry. Look, I know you've gone beyond the call here. It's just..."
"It's just what?"
She fell silent for a moment.
"I'm not ready to deal with this."
Farrow leaned over with some effort, wincing as he stretched his back, popped open the passenger door, said,
"Just go in and be a fly on the wall tonight. For now, let's not breach the damn court order."
Amanda nodded. Farrow was only looking out for her, and she knew it. She thanked him, gave him a mock salute, and got out of the car, hit the buzzer on the door, waited for 10 seconds, pressed the buzzer again. The thought of going inside filled her guts with dread. She looked around the street. It was almost 8 in the evening, and the city was still alive with tourists, New Yorkers, and traffic. There was a pizza parlor across the street, beside a Wendy's. A lot of the stores on this street were pop-up tourist traps selling I Heart New York hoodies, ball caps, postcards, and miniature figurines of the Statue of Liberty. Farrow was still parked by the curb, waiting. She knew he wouldn't leave until she was inside, but it didn't look like there was anyone in the building. Amanda turned away from the door just as it opened.
"Can I help you?"
said a voice. Amanda stopped and swung around nervously. The man standing in the doorway was in his 30s, wearing a burgundy sweater and skinny jeans. He had a thick mop of brown hair that curled over his forehead onto his Coke bottle glasses.
"I was looking for the parents' T&B group," said Amanda.
"Parental trauma and bereavement is right upstairs. It's my group. Hi, I'm Matt,"
said the man, extending a hand. Amanda huddled into her black wool overcoat, pulled off a glove, shook his hand, and said,
"Hi, I'm Amanda."
"I've been expecting you. It's cold, please, come inside."
She turned, waved at Farrow, who honked and pulled away. Amanda followed Matt up 2 flights of creaking, uneven wooden stairs and into a large room. A single halo of light from a bare bulb hung over a group of people seated in a circle. There were boxes, stacks of chairs, and large, odd-shaped items covered in white sheets behind them. A photocopier sat in the corner. Matt asked her for ID, and she handed over a driver's license. He copied it, said he needed it for his files, then handed it back. Amanda's eyes adjusted to the gloom, and she saw that this was a storage area for the store downstairs. She made out the shapes of drum kits, double basses, and guitars lining the 4 walls. Just beyond the group was a table with a coffee maker and plastic cups. There were 6 or 7 people in the group, most of them making small talk. Ordinary-looking women and men, all dressed in sweaters and overshirts, bulky coats resting on the backs of their chairs. Only a few seats were left in the circle.
"Before we go over there, would you like to choose a name?" said Matt.
"I'm sorry?" said Amanda.
He spoke quietly, a passive look on his face.
This is a closed group, Amanda, and there are two simple rules. Number one, we don't use our real names. Number two, we don't give away details, places, or names that might allow other group members to identify you. A lot of people here have been through horrific experiences, and in order to be able to share them, they want anonymity. We talk about our emotions here. Some people don't want to share if they think their fellow group members will go home and Google them. You know what I mean?
Amanda nodded. If she had to participate in the group, she hadn't planned on revealing anything about her past for that very reason. Keeping things anonymous made sense.
Call me Wendy, she said.
We already have a Wendy,
said Matt, pointing to a small, thin woman with bright blonde hair swept up in a baseball cap and ponytail. She wore blue jeans and a bulky navy sweater in a way that made her look as though she was trying to hide her wiry frame. Her cheekbones stood out proudly on her face, and her skin looked like it hadn't felt the sun in a long time. It was difficult to pinpoint an age, older than Amanda, but hard to tell by how much. There was a haunted look about Wendy. But when Amanda cast her gaze around the rest of the circle, she caught the same look in some of the other faces, too.
I suppose it doesn't really matter what I'm called here. How about Jane?
Matt nodded, said,
Jane is fine. Help yourself to coffee and take a seat.
Amanda sat down in a chair beside a large woman with curly hair and a bubblegum pink cardigan who introduced herself as Betty. She had a set of rosary beads entwined in her thick, round fingers. Betty smiled at her painfully. Then the moment she looked away, the smile dropped from her face as if it was tied to an anvil that had just fallen off the side of a cliff. Some of the group were already in conversation. Two or three were talking basketball. The rest of them were discussing the mayoral elections and the news of a woman attacked in her home that had been doing the rounds on the local TV channels. That kind of story always got people talking. The thought that New Yorkers might not be safe in their own homes had people scared. Amanda didn't join in any of the conversations. Betty chimed in here and there with a comment or two. The only other person who sat silently was Wendy. She had tucked one leg beneath the other and turned away from the two men beside her, who were discussing last night's game. Matt stepped into the center of the circle of chairs and called for quiet before sitting down next to Amanda. She noticed his cologne for the first time, rose and vanilla, maybe Calvin Klein. She hadn't noticed it earlier, and it made her wonder if he'd sneaked into a bathroom to put some on for her benefit.
Thank you all for coming out, folks. I know it's a cold one out there and snow is due. We have a new member in the group tonight. Everyone, this is Jane,
he said, and threw out his hands towards her, as if she was about to walk through a set of sparkling drapes onto the stage of a crummy daytime TV game show. Everyone mumbled a hello, everyone except Wendy, who was staring into her coffee cup. Amanda nodded in acknowledgement, but said nothing more. Matt folded his arms, crossed his legs, and leaned back in his chair, his eyes still on Amanda. No one said anything. The silence began to build in her ears, like a pan of water slowly starting to bubble. She glanced up from the floor, feeling heat rising to her cheeks. People were staring at her, smiling, friendly, expectant. All except Wendy, who couldn't seem to bring herself to look. Was she supposed to say something? Was that it? Amanda hadn't planned on saying anything in the first session. She'd hoped she could keep her head down and just get through it. She didn't want to talk about Luis or Jess. Talking only made things worse. With every passing second, she felt more eyes on her, trying to see into her heart, trying to look upon her pain. She kept that to herself. It was her grief, her loss, her pain. And she wanted it hot and private, so she could use it, make it her secret weapon. It was the nerve ending that would eventually make her pull that trigger in Crone's face. She had to stop this now.
I'm not ready for this, not yet, she said.
Betty nodded her head, said,
You're stronger than you think, honey,
and reached over, patted Amanda's knee.
It's all so raw, said Amanda.
She clamped her lips shut, hugged her sides and began rocking back and forth in the cold air that surrounded her statement.
You can get through this, Jane. With help and support, and knowing that there are others just like you who have dealt with that pain and continue to fight it every day. That's what we do here. We're fighters, said Matt.
Amanda's eyes flicked forward. She'd sensed movement opposite her, and sure enough, it was Wendy. She rolled her eyes at Matt dramatically, then shook her head.
Wendy, perhaps you might like to share something for our new member? Show them how it's done, said Matt.
Wendy reached into her pocket, drew out a soft pack of lucky strikes, shook it until one stood up, which she then took between her thin lips.
There's no smoking in here, Wendy, you know that, said Matt as Wendy lit up and inhaled. I'm not ready to talk tonight, said Wendy.
I don't mind talking, said Betty, raising her hand, the cheap rosary beads jangling.
Matt nodded somewhat reluctantly. The rest of the group shifted in their seats, some exhaled loudly. Amanda got the impression they were readying themselves for a long night of listening to Betty, and they'd been down this road more than once before.
I know some of you must have looked up my case, and I don't blame you. I'm not judging. When my boy was shot in the street, I swore I wanted to kill the one responsible. My boy never hurt nobody. 16 years old and his whole life ahead of him. And to think this punk pulled a gun and shot him in the street for what? The $10 he had in his wallet? It nearly killed me, too. But then I went to the trial and I heard about this kid's life. The beatings, the poverty, the abuse. He was treated just as bad as a half-crazed dog. If you treat a human being like that, well, what do you expect? I went to see him in prison with my pastor after he was sentenced. And I stood in the same room with him and the district attorney and Pastor Joe, and I opened my arms.
To emphasize her point, Betty closed her eyes and stretched out her arms as if she was waiting for a hug. There were a few more sighs and some barking from the plastic chairs skidding on the floor as two people took the opportunity to get up and get a coffee refill.
And I said to this young man, I believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. Continued Betty.
She then paused, took a sharp intake of breath, as if she was steeling herself, getting ready to reveal some miracle.
I am of his church and his people, and I forgive you for your wicked sin against my family, said Betty. And you know what he did, this punk kid? He cried and we hugged. I found it in my heart to forgive him that day. I felt the Lord that day. He was right there in that room with us.
Betty nodded, sniffed back a tear, fumbled with the rosary beads. There were some murmurs of approval among the other members of the group. Wendy noisily blew a plume of smoke into the air, and Amanda followed its trail as it kissed the ceiling light and whirled around it.
I wish you wouldn't smoke in here, said Matt.
Why?
Said Wendy.
The Lord isn't dragging his ass into this room, that's for damn sure, she said. Wendy, please, said Matt.
She shook her head, looked at Betty, and said,
I heard your story before. We all heard it before. It's good you've gotten some peace, but some of us don't want to forgive, can't forgive. And that doesn't make us bad people. It's just the way it is. Some bastards don't deserve forgiveness, ever.
Matt launched into a long, placatory diatribe about forgiveness, why no one was judging anyone's reaction to grief in this room. He was placating both Wendy and Betty, and making sure the session didn't turn into a fight. Amanda sat quietly and listened, watched Wendy light up another smoke. She was beginning to like Wendy. Some of the other members gave a brief rundown of where they were in their personal journey, as Matt called it. As each of them began to talk, they prefaced their stories by giving a macabre introduction.
Hi, I'm Lucy. Lost my husband and little girl in a car wreck.
John, here. My son was killed in a bar fight.
Terry, my daughter, was in the North Tower on 9/11.
And so on. Amanda imagined that it would almost be better for them to wear name badges saying stabbing, terrorism, hate crime, drunk driver. Their lives were defined by the children who had been taken from them.
There's meaning in every life, said Matt. Your children were loved, and their love is still here, right here with us, in this very room. That's enough for tonight. See you all next week.
The circle of people broke slowly, with some staying in the seats to talk, and others making a last visit to the coffee station before hitting the street. Amanda beat it out of there fast. She heard the front door slamming shut just as she began to descend the stairs. She went outside, looked right, and then left. To her left, the slight but unmistakable figure of Wendy walked away, leaving trails of smoke in her wake. Amanda tucked her hands into her pockets and strolled after her. She didn't get far. There was a bar on the corner, and Wendy flicked the butt of her cigarette into the traffic and ducked inside. Slowing her pace, Amanda gazed through the window. Wendy sat at the bar, a cold Miller in front of her already, and no one else within 10 feet. It didn't look like the kind of place you'd arrange to meet someone. It was a dive bar with heavy metal music and stains on the carpet, visible even from the street. As she reached the crosswalk, Amanda stopped to wait for the light. She could feel that familiar itch. Fuck it, said Amanda, and she went inside. There was a stool beside Wendy. She stood beside it and said, Do you mind if I sit here? I could use a drink. Wendy looked slightly uncomfortable without a cigarette in her lips. It looked as though her face had nothing to do without it. Yet it was expressive enough to tell Amanda that Wendy recognized her.
You're the new girl, Jane, the one Matt embarrassed, she said.
Thanks for reminding me. Is this seat taken?
Glancing at the seat and then Amanda's face, Wendy hesitated before answering.
You can take it as long as I see a driver's license.
A driver's license? Asked Amanda. What? Do you work here? I know I don't look a day over 16, but trust me, I'm way past 30. Anyway, I thought this whole group thing was supposed to be anonymous. Matt told me about the rules.
We're not in the group anymore. You see a set of rules above this here bar? It's nothing to do with your age, honey. I just want to make sure you're not a journalist. Some of them infiltrate groups like this, trying to worm a story out of a victim. It happens. It almost happened to me, and now I'm extra careful. So what'll it be? Said Wendy.
Amanda drew out her driver's license from her purse, slapped it on the counter. Wendy took it, studied it, and then entered Amanda's name into the Google app on her phone.
No, don't do that, said Amanda.
You afraid I'm going to find out you work for the New York Post, or?
Amanda took her ID, put it in the back pocket of her jeans, looked away. She didn't want to risk seeing some of those search results. The photos of her, Luis, and Jess. Especially that one taken last year during their hike upstate. Jess's cheeks were rosy red from the cold, and she looked so full of life and happiness.
Oh, fuck. I'm sorry, said Wendy. I had to check. I didn't mean to.
It's fine, whispered Amanda.
If she'd spoken any louder, Wendy would have heard her voice tremble and threaten to break.
How about I buy you a drink? Said Wendy.
Amanda nodded, said,
Vodka tonic.
And took the seat at the bar beside Wendy, who ordered from the bartender. The two women sat in silence for a time, although it didn't feel awkward to Amanda. It was as if Wendy knew the woman beside her needed a moment to beat down the pain. The bartender placed Amanda's drink on a beer mat and slipped away.
You said something in the group that I found interesting, said Amanda. You said something about forgiveness. That sometimes people don't deserve it.
That's right, said Wendy. But let's not go there yet. Neither of us are drunk enough for that conversation.
Wendy raised her beer bottle, Amanda took her drink, and as they clinked glasses, Wendy said,
I say we get good and drunk first. Then we can talk all you want.